Well, there'll be a phone call between the French and American presidents in the coming days to try and stem the angry fallout from the AUKUS alliance between the US, UK and Australia, which saw Australia dump a $90 billion submarine deal with the French in favour of a nuclear-powered submarine deal with either US or the UK. But what difference does it make whether the subs are diesel, electric or nuclear-powered? Matt Bevan's been taking a look at this. Matt, you submarine head, you, how are you?
G'day, Fran. I've been very much enjoying looking at this over the last few days. It was kind of overshadowed by the space race during the 50s and 60s, but at the same time as the Soviets and Americans were trying to figure out how to build the best spaceships, they were also frantically trying to build the best submarines. The first nuclear submarine belonged to the United States, the USS Nautilus, launched in 1954, but it wasn't until 1958 that it really showed the massive advantages of nuclear propulsion.
This is the Arctic Ocean. Somewhere under this sea of ice is an American submarine, the nuclear-powered Nautilus. Time, 2315, 3 August, 1958. Place, 400 feet below the North Pole.
It took three attempts, but the USS Nautilus eventually managed to cruise under the entire Arctic ice cap from the Pacific to the Atlantic Ocean. The reason this was such a big deal was this was previously thought to be impossible. Diesel-electric submarines, invented in the early 20th century, work like your phone with a battery. They power along under the water using battery power. But every so often, days if you're travelling slowly, or hours if you're travelling quickly, you need to recharge the batteries. You do this with a diesel generator, which, being an internal combustion engine, needs air to function. So you come up close to the surface, poke up a snorkel and suck in air to run the motor, recharge the batteries, and then you submerge again and go on your way. This is how Australia's current fleet of Collins-class submarines work. But a nuclear submarine, including the USS Nautilus in the 1950s, works differently. It uses a nuclear reactor to heat water like a kettle, which then blows steam through a turbine, pushing the boat along. It's not only more powerful, but it doesn't need air or recharging or even refueling. The current submarines can run for 25 or 30 years using the uranium installed at construction. The only limitations for staying underwater are the people on board and the mechanics of the rest of the submarine. Stuff can break and you can run out of food. Other than that, you can pretty much stay underwater indefinitely. So you can cruise right under the Arctic. The obvious problem, though, is you have a nuclear power station on board. But retired submarine commander Eric Thompson told Cold War Conversations podcast that the first admiral of the nuclear navy in the US, Hyman Rickover, had a strategy for dealing with that.
He set up the most rigid quality assurance, both of the machinery, the design and the building, and the people. So Rickover personally interviewed every single officer who was destined to serve in an American nuclear submarine in the early days. And the term Rickover rejects crept in because he would just blackball someone if he didn't think he was up to standard.
Eric Thompson, who wrote a book about his time on board submarines called On Her Majesty's Nuclear Service, told the story of a time there was a problem with the nuclear reactor on board his submarine. Any time in the reactor chamber to fix it would lead to exposure to radiation, and turning the reactor off would lead the small batteries to drain and you would lose life support. He explained how they repaired the reactor, slowly but surely.
I think we ended up with something like 7 or 8 reactor shutdowns on patrol, with people going into the reactor compartment and doing 20 minutes worth of work, then coming back out again. And then we'd have to start the reactor up and recharge the battery and then start all over again to go in for another 20 minutes. It took 36 hours to fix the problem.
But the idea of subarctic submarines put the Soviet Union into a panic. They started pumping out nuclear submarines as quickly as they could without a lot of regard to safety regulations. Their first ever nuclear sub, the K-19, had a leak in the reactor coolant system. The process of fixing it led to the irradiation of the entire crew. 7 died in the next week, 15 in the next 2 years. The Soviet nuclear reactors continued to have problems. 14 of their subs had nuclear reactor accidents of one kind or another up until the end of the 80s, when they seemed to finally have got it under control. That compares to zero from any other nuclear submarine navy. That being said, US nuclear submarines did sink, but not due to problems with the reactor. Finding sunken nuclear submarines was a big priority for both the US and the Soviets.
Most American experts agree that there is no danger from the sunken submarine, either from the two nuclear reactors on board or the 16 nuclear missiles. The Pentagon assessment was backed up by civilian opinion.
It's not a radiation problem in the same manner that Chernobyl was. These reactors on the bottom are not going to cause us or the world any problems.
In fact, get this, friend, the discovery of the Titanic in 1985 was made by a secret US mission that was hunting for sunken nuclear submarines. But by the 1980s, detecting submarines in the open ocean had become easier using modern technology.
When Soviet submarines leave port, they are tracked on the surface by satellites. After they submerge, they must pass through narrow ocean passages where sound surveillance systems, underwater microphones called SOSUS, have been placed. They tell when a submarine moves into the Atlantic. It's a similar situation in the Pacific. The technology is so advanced that sometimes the identity of an individual submarine can be determined just by the sound it makes. When a submarine is detected, an airborne device called MAD can pinpoint its precise location by determining where its metal hull disturbs the Earth's magnetic field.
But the Soviet Union went back to what they had learned from the first ever nuclear submarine, the USS Nautilus, and found a place to hide.
The Soviet Union is keeping its newest and biggest missile submarines further away from American search planes and ships. They are designed to hide under the polar ice cap for months at a time, ready to break through the ice to launch their missiles.
The Typhoon-class Russian submarines are giant, twice the size of the largest US subs, and provide comfortable living quarters for their crew to live under the ice cap for months at a time, waiting for the call to breach and launch ballistic missiles. Nuclear submarines are great for Russia because they can hide under the ice cap. They are great for the US because they can go long distances quickly and don't need to return to base often to refuel. For Australia, up until now, the priority has been defending our immediate neighbourhood. But as experts have reported over the weekend, nuclear submarines will give Australia the opportunity of operating far further afield for longer, Fran.
Okay, Matt. Well, it's going to take a while till they get there. So there'll be lots of theories and analysis before then. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Fran.